Welcome to Ask an Atheist. We're a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We come to you live every week from SCAN Studios in Seattle, and we're on from 3 to 4 Pacific Time, and we're archived online at askanatheist.tv. I'm Mike Gillis, and with me this week is our conspiracy and skepticism expert, Case.
Thank you very much, Mike. How are you doing? I'm doing terrific. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been an interesting week. Been a lot of fun for the last hour dealing with fun technical issues.
And yeah, we have a series of really, really technical nasty snags that are hanging us up today, but we're going to work our way through the show. We'll get this going. So anyway, today's show is a really good one. Basically, we're going to be looking at conspiracy theories, and I really hope that this is going to be part of a running series that we'll actually review this, or not just conspiracy theories, but just skepticism in general. I think that It's a topic that's worth looking at over and over again. So probably the leading question here is, well, why skepticism in an atheist show? Because this is Ask an Atheist and not Ask a Skeptic. And pretty much it's when you look at atheism, you're basically, well, at least for us, we're looking at atheism in a very scientific way, in that we approach it with, just do the claims for a God, do they hold up to scientific evidence? Like, is evolution in the Bible? No.
No.
Let's see what else. So
neither is a round earth, though.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess I look at it. What is the connection between atheism and skepticism? For me, it's a simple question of atheism is basically applying skeptical principles to the God question, basically saying, okay, does a God exist? Skepticism, if I had to define it very simply, would be withholding belief until the burden of proof has been met, sufficient evidence has been reached that a claim holds up. And essentially skepticism, we're sort of expanding this, and as we say in our opening intro, we're about skeptical inquiry. So this deals with questions of New Age beliefs, conspiracy theories, cryptozoology, which is the study of animals that can't be studied. Just all these, there's a ton of questions. There's a lot of really shady claims that a lot of people accept on little evidence or negative evidence or basically on whim or whatever makes them feel good. And I guess what the skeptic says is that isn't good enough. It actually does matter whether the things that we believe are true or not. And
And you know what? Let's take a minute to dispel the notion of the closed-minded skeptic, or you know, who's cynical, who's negative, who doesn't want to hear about evidence to the contrary. Really, really, the best skeptics can look at some evidence and say, "Change my mind." I want you to show me something that will change my mind.
I think that's a major question. If you look at what a skeptic's doing when they demand evidence, is they're saying, "Change my mind," because that's the only important question when it comes to whether you're open-minded or not. Are you willing to look at claims and that you don't necessarily believe in or agree with initially? That's the thing, is that if you throw, okay, what would it take to change your mind? That's the only important question.
Yeah, that's a great way to open up any debate.
Yeah.
What kind of evidence would change your mind? You know, and if someone answers to the effect of nothing will change my mind, then the debate's over.
I've gotten that answer from a lot of creationists and Christians over the years who basically say there is nothing that can change my mind. That's the very definition of closed-mindedness.
Yes. Yeah.
Essentially what we say when we say we demand more evidence, we want positive evidence for these claims, is we're giving you the definition of open-minded. We're saying we want you to try to change our mind, and this is the recipe for changing our mind.
Right. And we love science, you know, and we stick up for science against people who would distort it, be it religion or for political reasons or willful ignorance. Where, you know, a true skeptic will look at any position and change their mind if the evidence is contrary to what they believe.
Yeah, that's the thing I find, though, with a lot of conspiracy theories or religious ideas, is that the evidence that they provide is just so bad.
Yes.
It just doesn't count as evidence. I mean, it's the sort of thing that they wouldn't accept if somebody was making a claim that they would disagree with. I guess the way I like to think of it is, just imagine for a second that you're put on trial for murder. What sort of evidence would you accept being used against you? Would somebody's just deeply held belief, or the fact that they were raised to believe that you were a murderer, or they had a psychic vision, or it came to them through revelation, would you accept that if you were put on trial? Would this be sufficient?
Or, you know, if the victim's mother had a gut feeling that you were just it.
Yeah, that's it. That's just this. I feel this. I feel this very, very strongly. And don't try to invalidate my feeling. And it's like, no, a feeling is one thing. But the question is, does it correspond with reality?
Right,
Right.
So,
and we're going to look at negative evidence in a little bit too, because I think that you know we should really look at what comprises good evidence versus just evidence that just doesn't hold a cup of water. It's just, you know. But before we do that, we should probably touch in on the news a little bit.
Yeah.
And we'll hit our main topic.
Yeah, some interesting things happened this week.
Okay.
We talked about this a little bit last week. The Westboro Baptist Church was going to be going to Comic-Con, and it was going to be a real question of who the goofier character was going to be in this conflict. Well, Comics Alliance, actually, it's always hilarious whenever I get to do a chocolate and peanut butter story. Comic books and religious nutbags.
Yes.
You know, it's two things that are great that are even great together.
And we have some great pictures of this.
Yeah,
you have some great pictures.
The Comics Alliance had this article that they put out called Superheroes versus the Westboro Baptist Church. They faced down humans time and again, but Fred Phelps and his minions from the Westboro Baptist Church were not ready for the cosplay action that awaited them at Comic-Con. After all, who could win against a counter-protest that includes robots, magic anime girls, Trekkies, Jedis, and kittens? Unbeknownst to the dastardly fanatics at the Westboro Baptist Church, the good folks at San Diego's Comic-Con were prepared for their arrival with their own special brand of superhuman counter-protesting, chanting, "What do we want? Gay sex. When do we want it? Now."
just a note to the guys in the booth. We do have pictures of this, so if you could just punch that up for
us. Yeah, let's punch up some of these pictures,
because
as great as it is to describe them, it's even better to see for yourself. As we can see, that's probably my favorite one
right there. I love that one.
Yeah, that what the F, magnets, what the F, how do the F do they work? Of course, referencing the ICP song.
Miracles was the name of the song.
Miracles.
Yeah.
There's some more counter-protest ones. Those are the ass hats in question. Those are the Westboro Baptist Church, who basically are live action internet trolls.
They are live action internet trolls.
And then there's Bender from Futurama with the kill all humans sign.
That's actually brilliant. I
love that one.
That's my second favorite picture of the series. I really like that one.
It really is great.
Yeah.
It's just fun to, if you're going to go to a fake protest, to dress like a robot. It's hard to compete with that.
Yeah.
Then there's All Glory to the Hypnotoad, another Futurama reference. that's God Hates Kittens.
Yes. Now, one thing I want to mention was that Westboro Baptist Church, they make no bones about getting their schedule out there. They want you to know they're coming to town.
That's why I call them internet trolls. It's important to note that as bad as people like Rick Warren and Pat Robertson and a lot of these guys are, they actually do have a goal in mind. They're trying to change somebody's mind. They're all about getting political power to enact their agenda. I mean, this is what they're about. They're about changing somebody's mind. Their basically stated goal is we want everyone to eventually be a fundamentalist Christian the same way as us. Fred Phelps is not like that. The defining trait of an internet troll is that the entire purpose is disruption. They basically inject themselves into a conversation or a situation to be as offensive as possible, and it's offensive for its own sake. It's not offensive to make a point. It's not offensive to change somebody's mind. It's all about just being the biggest dick you possibly can so that you can giggle about other people being made uncomfortable. And I think he really picked the wrong thing to go after with Comic-Con, which is that he's basically injecting himself where a bunch of people who, I'm a geek, I love geeks. When we see somebody like this, our initial reaction, of course, is to poke them with a stick and laugh at them. He wants people to get angry. From what I understand, I mean, this is a family of lawyers. They're incredibly litigious.
Very litigious.
They go out looking to make people angry, and a lot of their seed money to go around the country acting like assholes is to provoke somebody to become so angry about the stuff that they're saying that somebody will take a swing at them, somebody will throw a rock at them. I've seen footage of their car being have been pelted with rocks.
Yep.
Right there, there's their lawsuit. That's how they do it. The best thing you can possibly do to someone like this. And I had a discussion about this last week where I talked about how Sam and I had been at the U Village, not U Village, but the University Street Fair a couple years ago, and how I'd asked to get my picture taken with a fundamentalist, and how his demeanor absolutely changed when I was giving him attention.
Yeah, this is one of those guys with those repent signs.
Yeah,
Jesus is coming, and you're going to burn in hell, right?
Absolutely. He's putting himself in the position where he is intentionally putting himself into a crowd where people are going to disagree with him. I mean, he's in the university district.
Yeah,
you're not going to get you're not going to get a lot of traction spouting a bunch of crazy fundamentalist anti-gay stuff.
Right.
But his attitude changed. changed when he wanted a picture taken with him. And you know what's also great? The attitude of all the people around him changed. Suddenly, he wasn't this opponent that they were screaming at anymore. He became like, you know, when you go to Disneyland and the costume like characters. It's like, oh, it's Goofy. I want to get my picture taken with Goofy. Isn't this great? He became this like sideshow. He's like, oh, dude, I want to get my picture taken with the crazy man.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy man, hold up your sign.
Cruella de Vil, can you hold my backpack?
Exactly. You know, it's like just, Captain Hook. You know, it's like he's the cartoony bad guy. That's there to for your amusement. And I love that. I think that's what we need to do with people like Fred Phelps. And I think that this protest is just a perfect example of that. If we make him a joke, I mean, this isn't somebody like Rick Warren, who Fred Phelps is not going to get the invocation at a presidential inauguration.
Right,
this is not somebody.
He's
not going to affect legislation. I mean, even Sean Hannity hates this guy. What we can do is make a joke out of him. We can make him something where he becomes this laughable little comic character that we go, oh, there goes fundamentalist man. Oh, he's funny. And I think we just have to keep doing that. I mean, he is a clown.
Yeah.
Let's have fun with him as a clown rather than get angry. He wants you to get angry at him. He wants to be, because when you get angry at him, you reaffirm his notion that he's in this life or death battle against the forces of darkness, and that you represent that force of darkness. Don't give him that. The best thing you can do to somebody who's like that, who takes themselves completely seriously, is to not take them seriously. Make them a clown. Make them a joke.
Yeah.
Let's laugh at this jerk.
Yeah. You know, one unfortunate thing that I do want to mention is that he had protested at one kid's funeral who was a military member, and his father sued him for harassing his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a countersuit, and now that guy owes something to the effect of $10,000 or $20,000 to the Phelps family for court costs. And that's really unfortunate. That really speaks to the fact that these guys know what they're doing in the court of law.
Well, they're lawyers.
They're all lawyers.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, I know someone who actually has hired them and said that they are in court that all that, you know, God hates faxing, that just melts. They are actually fantastic lawyers, very aggressive, and they know their stuff.
I know he was like a civil rights attorney before he decided that civil rights were basically things you were bestowed upon by his dictatorial god. I mean, that's the thing, is you can see even when you actually look at the signs he has, he's not trying to change your mind. He says, God is your enemy, God hates you.
Yeah.
It's kind of Calvinist in its sort of attitude that your fate is already sealed.
Yeah.
You are going to hell,
and
I just want to rub it in.
All right,
what a dick.
All right, so let's move on. The next one we have here is Florida Church sponsors International Burn a Koran Day. The Dove World Outreach Center, a non-denominational church in Gainesville, Florida.
And your place for all your Dove needs.
Yes. 99.9%? Or no, that's Ivory Soap, isn't it?
I think so.
Anyway, so they're planning on to mark this year's anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks with a little bonfire of Korans, the holy book of Islam. They even have a Facebook page with a mission statement just to justify their actions. On September 11, 2010, we will burn the Koran on the property of the Dove World Outreach Center in Gainesville, Florida, in remembrance of the fallen victims and to stand against the evil of Islam. Islam is of the devil, they say. So the problem I have with this, I guess, is that it's okay to burn other people's books. You know, like that's one thing that, you know, like when I hear a lot is being politically correct. Well, it's always political, you know, people actually deride being politically correct, but it's always against someone else's political correctness. Like, if we burned Bibles, if someone burned Bibles, they'd be up in arms about that.
Yeah, I find sort of funny about this is that, it's his free speech. He has the right.
Absolutely.
He wants to burn Quran.
Yes.
But I find the funny bit is that he's going to have to buy a ton of copies of the Quran and essentially give money to the sort of people that he's trying to stick it to. He can burn his own property. It's the same way if I burn a bunch of Bibles, I had to buy a bunch of Bibles for me to do that. I mean, this isn't, you can't make this essentially comparable to what the Nazis did, where they just gathered up other people's property to burn.
Right. The Gideons are not putting Korans in hotels.
Yeah.
So you can't get any free ones in the hotels.
You don't.
In hotel rooms.
So I find it kind of funny that these are the first people who would freak out if somebody decides to burn a Bible. We'd be these horrible, hateful...
Right.
We're that anyways, but we'd be more so.
Right, right.
And I just find it such a waste of time and money to buy a bunch of stuff simply to burn it, unless it's, of course, firewood.
Anyway.
And seriously, it's like printed on rice paper anyways. It wouldn't burn for very long. You wouldn't get a lot of warmth from it.
So what else do we have?
Last story for the day. This comes from Australia, and I will give you the glossary of definitions in just a little bit. David Barker says he won't have a Muslim in Parliament after being dumped by Liberals. Quick thing to understand about Australian politics is the Conservative Party are called the Liberal Party, and the Liberal Party are called Labour. So it's worth mentioning that when they mean Liberal, they don't mean small L Liberal. Anyways, David Barker says a dumped Liberal Party candidate is refusing to go back away from controversial remarks he made about Muslims and the atheism of Prime Minister Julia Gillard. David, he's basically been replaced as the candidate in what's largely a safe Labour seat for their party. The Liberal State Party Director, Mark Neum, said that Barker had not conducted himself in the way the party expected of its candidates for the August 21st election. Barker, who calls himself a man of strong Christian faith, reportedly used his Facebook site to accuse Labour of moving the nation closer to being a Muslim country. In a letter to local Christian leaders, he, seeking their support, he pointed out that Ms. Gillard was an atheist and that his Labour opponent in Chifley, Ed Husic, was a Muslim. And basically, what we've seen right now, he's basically made remarks, there shouldn't be a Muslim in Parliament, blah, 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 I'm a Christian. But here's, I mean, there's a lot of angry about that, about the comment, you know, anti-Muslim remarks. But the thing that really stood out in this article, more than anything, was the lack of any semblance of anger, even from his political opponents, about the remark he made about atheists, that we shouldn't have an atheist prime minister. Nobody's getting angry about that. And if you really want to understand the sort of Christian privilege, or even just religious privilege that involves not just in this country, which, by the way, Australia is quite a bit more secular than the U.S.
True.
If you really want to understand the sort of really kind of almost default status that anti-atheist vibes kind of put out there, it's really worth mentioning that nobody gets angry on our behalf when we're called things like vile or, you know, oh, we shouldn't be trusted with power or incapable of morality. Nobody really gets angry on our behalf. Only atheists do. And I think that's something that we have to do. So the reason we have this show is just putting ourselves out there so that people realize, hey, we're normal human beings.
Right.
We're not eating babies. And I think it's really important that we can get ourselves to the point that when somebody says something like that about atheism or about atheists saying, oh, we're incapable of morality, that there are political consequences for that. Somebody realizes that, wow, a lot of people get angry if I act like a jerk towards this group of people. That's what I'm saying. I find it really funny. It doesn't come up once. They mention she's an atheist once, but every one of his defenses is about, oh, well, I'm not against Muslims. I just don't think they should have power. And it's just like, wow, that sounds like you're against Muslims. So, anyways, those are the news stories we have, and we want to dive right into this topic.
Well, you know, actually, I want to just touch on what you had to say real quick, and that is, you know, they did a Pew report as to which religious groups or not religious groups were reviled the most.
Yeah.
And atheists, for a while, we atheists held the bottom, but someone has beaten us out recently, and that is the Scientologists. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we can count on them to hold up the bottom for us.
I just want to say thank you, Tom Cruise, for being worse than any of us could
David
ever
Miscavige,
be.
David Miscavige, we appreciate the efforts. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow.
Yes. It's,
you know, we're going to have to work really hard to be as reviled as we are again, but we're still, I mean, nobody would, it's amazing that you have these strong majorities of people that would never vote for an atheist candidate. And it's amazing how much of a foothold this religious privilege has in our country.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason we have this show, is we want to put our voices out there so that people aren't just so horrified, as if simply stating my disbelief in something that's unsupported by evidence is somehow a personal attack upon anybody.
So anyway, let's cut into our topic.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah, basically, our show today is about conspiracy theories. And one of the things I thought we'd open up with is a discussion about negative evidence. Now, negative evidence, quite simply, is evidence that cannot be proven. It's usually strung together from coincidences. It's just someone's general feeling. It's just stuff that can't be proven. And negative evidence is the absolute lifeblood of all conspiracy theories. It's stuff that you cannot prove, and it just feels funny.
Yeah, so, I find the thing that I found with a lot of negative evidence is that it always comes from a hole or a perceived gap in our knowledge.
Right.
That we don't know this, therefore I know this. Like an unidentified flying object.
Right, a light in the sky. We'll start with that.
A light in the sky. I mean, what does the U in UFO stand for? It stands for unidentified. That should be where the discussion ends. I don't know what I saw. I don't know, therefore I know. So I can just pull anything out of my ass and say that's what it is. I'm just going to assert that's what it is. Even though I don't have any positive evidence, but it fills the hole in my knowledge.
Right.
And it's...
What else could move through the sky so fast?
Yeah,
what
else? It had to be an alien spacecraft.
It has to be a UFO. That's the only thing it could logically be. And that just, it doesn't add up. That's not the way to look at evidence.
And again, that's the definition of closed-minded, is it can't be anything else.
Right.
Is to pretend that just because you don't know something doesn't mean that nobody knows this. I really think it's worth mentioning that other people know a lot of things, and other people, whatever you're talking about, there's somebody who studies that for a living.
Very likely, yes.
And it's worth finding out what they think about it, because I can guarantee you that they've heard about flying lights in the sky, and they might even know the answer to it.
So one of the things I thought we'd do is I thought we'd actually construct a conspiracy based upon negative evidence, and we would throw out some ideas around. I thought we'd start with the Puget Sound Blood Center.
Oh.
Okay. All right, so the Puget Sound Blood Center. Here's some ideas right off the top of my head. Well, first of all, have you noticed that they're always wanting blood? I think that's very unusual and very odd, but okay.
They're always on the verge of running out of blood.
They're always on the verge of running out. There's no civilian oversight of what they're doing exactly. They're closed after hours. You can't get into the building. It's locked up shut. What else? What do we got?
There's a ton of back rooms there. I mean, if I try to go into a back room at the Puget Blood Center, they're trying to stop me. I mean, what are they hiding back there?
And how do you become a phlebotomist? Isn't that is just, you know, I've never heard of that before. You?
Seriously, I mean, who could use this much blood? That's the real question is, as I say, you know, who's here to benefit? Who's the person that needs this much blood on a regular basis?
And where's the blood going?
Yeah.
Answer that one, Puget Sound Blood Center.
And I mean, are there really that many gunshot victims all the time?
Right.
Somebody is taking this blood.
Right. And all right, here's actually the big one. The big one is that they've never issued a press release of any denials whatsoever that they have vampires working for them. And I think that's something that the Puget Sound Blood Center needs to address. Otherwise, this is going to be an open-ended issue, and people are asking questions.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, is it so hard to issue a press release about something like that? It doesn't matter that there's no evidence for the existence of vampires. Actually, no, wait. You know people who claim to be vampires, don't you?
Yes, but that's a show for another day.
Yeah. But so clearly there are people who say that they need this sort of blood out there. There's this huge supply of blood. Prove to me right now that it isn't vampires.
Right. I want to know if there are sanguinists working for the Puget Sound Blood Center, and I need to know it now. Otherwise, this show goes on air as is. Oh, actually, it is on air, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, too late. So the next one is the 520 Floating Bridge.
Oh.
There's a lot of open questions about the 520 Floating Bridge, and people demand answers. You'd actually mention a few earlier. What do we have? First of all, there are no pictures underneath the bridge, right? I haven't seen any pictures either released. I haven't seen any architectural diagrams. It's just whatever's underneath the bridge, no one knows what it is.
Anything could be down there.
Right. What else do we have? You're not allowed to swim near it.
What are they trying to hide?
Right. No submersibles can go underneath it, so you can't actually send your own expedition to check out what's underneath.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty obvious where we're going with this. Is that there's either a flying saucer underneath there, or...
I'm thinking Godzilla and a block of ice.
Okay, I thought Atlantis, but you know what? It could be... There's something
mermaids.
Underneath there.
There are mermaids.
And they're not telling us what it is. And I want answers, okay? I want a press release from them.
I want access to that Atlantean technology.
Right. I want a press release from them, and this is from Ask an Atheist to the city of Seattle, or whoever's in charge of it. We want to know what's underneath that bridge, okay?
Seriously.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a troll.
A troll? an aqua troll?
I never cross a floating bridge without a goat.
Okay. Okay.
It's better safe than sorry.
Yeah. So anyway, let's touch a little bit on cognitive dissonance. And what that is in a nutshell, it's when you attach yourself to an idea or a proposition, and when you hear ideas that are contrary to that idea, your ego kicks in and your defensive mechanisms kick in. Aesop's Fables very, very famously discussed about the fox with the grapes, and the fox couldn't reach the grapes. So he felt better when he realized that the grapes are probably going to be sour. They're probably going to be no good anyway. And that was his way of feeling better about the fact that he couldn't get the grapes. And we do that all the time.
Is that where the term sour grapes comes from?
That is where the term sour grapes comes from. And we do this sort of thing all the time. When approached with ideas or notions that are contrary to our own worldview, or we may actually be wrong about something we held cherished to be correct, We find defensive mechanisms to block it out, and everybody does this. Even skeptics, you know, to the best of our ability, we still do it.
And I think that's what the importance of the scientific method is that it recognizes our own personal biases, our own inability, our own confirmation bias, and tries to correct it by bringing other people in there. And that's what the peer review process does: is knowing that human beings are going to make mistakes.
Right.
And we're going to have biases. So we have to basically run the gauntlet of a lot of other people checking to make sure you dot your T's and cross your I's.
Yeah. So anyway, as you're watching this show, and if you believe in a conspiracy theory of one form or another, and you find yourself feeling defensive about it, just know that that is your own reaction to it. That is your cognitive ability just defending yourself against it. So
it's not an alien implant,
right? It's not, and there's nothing unusual, at least as far as I know. I mean, I don't know what's going on in that technical booth. There's nothing unusual going on between what we're saying and what's going on
Scan
TV.
I'm thinking Casey probably pulled off his Scooby-Doo mask and has revealed like some
Can
sort
Casey
of
really
lizard
be trusted?
Alien.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't see him right now.
Yeah. Very unusual.
He could be doing anything in there right now. He could be dissecting Scott.
He could be switching the cameras from one to another, but there's no way for us to really know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are red lights on these things, but who knows?
I suspect a sinister motive.
Let's move on. So anyway, one of the first conspiracy theories we thought we'd touch on is Barack Hussein Obama. Okay? A lot of conspiracy theories around our president of the United States. The first one, and most famously, is the birther controversy.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in the country that seriously doubt whether the president of the United States was born in the United States
right.
and is thus eligible to be president.
Right.
Is this possibly sour grapes?
You know, that's actually a very good throwback. Yes, is this sour grapes? Quite possibly. So there are a lot of theories as to where he comes from. Could it be Kenya? Could it be Indonesia?
I think David Icke actually believes him to be a shape-shifting lizard.
Yes, and you know what? That's actually not a joke.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about David Icke in just a few minutes.
Yeah, conspiracy theories are actually kind of similar to what's known as Poe's Law, which Poe's Law is applied to religious fundamentalism, saying you can't parody it, because the genuine article is pretty indistinguishable from
yeah.
this.
It looks like we have Barack Obama's gift certificate.
Yes, it's usable at any mall.
Yes. His birth certificate is up, and basically, here's what happened. In a nutshell, when he first started campaigning for president, there were some who said that he's not actually legitimately born in the U.S. So very early on in his campaign, he puts his birth certificate online. Actually, a very unusual step. I don't know of any presidential candidate who's put his birth certificate up. And
we've never had to before. It's never been an issue.
Yeah, right. This is actually a very new kind of rumor. So he goes to put it up, and there are people who say, "Well, that's not the long form birth certificate. That's not the real deal." Or they'll say, "Well, you know what? At the bottom of that birth certificate, if you can punch it up again, Casey, at the bottom of that birth certificate, it says any alterations to this birth certificate. Any alterations to this birth certificate make it invalid." And you'll notice the certificate number at the very top is blocked out, and therefore the certificate is invalid.
So if I just took his birth certificate and wrote a smiley face on it, he magically becomes not an American?
The end. The
wow.
End. We can coronate McCain right away. You know, just
but then McCain was poured in the Panama Canal Zone.
But that's a conspiracy for another day. Okay, so anyway, thankfully, the birther thing has kind of gone by the wayside, but it really gives you a sense as to people will hang on to and to believe something if it goes into their worldview of Obama is not an American citizen. He's illegitimate in some
That's
way.
What I find is it's not even just the birth certificate. There are also two different birth announcements in major Hawaiian newspapers.
Right.
So does this mean that, I mean, unless they have a time machine, which makes this conspiracy even more absurd.
Don't put it past
that, people. That he was chosen to become president in 1961. It's like, yes, somebody in 1961 said, let's take this this black child born to a single mom and make them president, because that's something you want to put a lot of money on.
Right, right.
So let's bribe two major newspapers to run this thing. It's like, well, hold on a minute here. Rather than run these birth announcements, you know, these fake ones and use your power, why not simply just fly his mom to Hawaii so he can be born there?
Right, right.
And who would choose a baby to be president? Who knows who this baby could have grown up into? You want to put all your money and he grows up into Gary Busey or who's someone else? It's fairly useless.
Well, I think the thing we're getting at here is that so often with these conspiracy theories is that they follow what we call is like the family circus style of terrorism or conspiracy, and that is instead of a direct straight line, for example, like the 9/11 planes flying into the jets flying into the World Trade Center. Instead of that, why don't we plant bombs and fake it? Why don't we just fake that? And I know about that. So why don't we just fake it? And so that's one of the things you'll see is that instead of Barack Obama just being born in the U.S., that why don't we just have him born someplace else and we'll fake everything else with the idea of getting him president. It makes no sense.
And if you're going to have a Manchurian candidate, wouldn't it be easier to not have this huge huge weak point, this huge Achilles heel, that you get him in office and he has this one thing that if he exposes it, your whole plan, everything you've done for decades, all the money you've spent on this, just goes down the tubes.
Right.
And seriously, why pick a baby at that point in the first place anyways? I mean, one, it's like, oh, now comes the easy part. Now all the pieces in place. Now he just has to win the Electoral College.
Yes. And who would put their money on Barack Hussein Obama as a child?
Yeah, he was...
Patrick Rogers, that's where I'd put my money.
I'd put my money on somebody who is in some sort of like political dynasty of some kind, like a Bush or a Kennedy.
Yeah.
Someone who it makes complete sense that they would be raised from birth with the idea that they're going to go into public office someday.
Right. So for the most part, like we mentioned earlier, the birther thing has ebbed. It's actually, you know, most people who are considered to be birthers are out of the mainstream, and thankfully it's gone by the wayside. So in fact, we have an ad that was ran by John McCain recently. That paints his opponent as a birther, and hopefully we can put that up. Play that clip. Orly Tate.
It's completely illegitimate for U.S. presidency for two reasons. Not only because he did not provide the place of his birth, but also because both parents have to be U.S. citizens.
Obama knows he is not natural born, as he knows where he was born, and he knows he was adopted in Indonesia.
Questions continue. And until President Obama signs his name, and in fact has the records revealed, the questions will remain.
The only difference between these people? Only one is running for the U.S. Senate.
Oh.
Now, J.D. Hayworth, he's not actually a birther. He's like birther curious in this one, you know?
I'm just asking questions.
Questions are just being asked. That's all. I'm not at the forefront of this. I just know the questions are being asked.
I think Jon Stewart referred to that as like the Neil Cavuto question mark. You can make an outrageous statement as long as you put a question mark at the end, and then you're like, oh well, I'm not saying, you know, I'm just asking the question. And I think the one they've used as an example is like, rather than calling somebody's mother a whore, you just say, your mother a whore? Asking the question.
Are we wearing pants? Who knows? It's just a question.
Yeah, we're just putting it out there.
So I really like the approach with that one. We're just gonna ask questions about Obama's birth.
Yeah, there's a couple things about Orly Tate I find funny. Not only that she's I guess in D&D she'd be multi-class. She's both a dentist and a lawyer.
Yeah, and she's actually something else. I don't remember. Go ahead.
The whole Zsa Zsa Gabor thing she has going on.
She's got it down pat.
Plus, I find really funny is that her first name is spelt in the same sort of internet lingo where you go, oh, really?
Yes.
So I think that pretty much says it. But, oh, man.
I think Orly Tate is a robot.
Oh, yeah,
that's
clearly.
That's just my own theory.
She was probably built by Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Who knows?
So anyway, we have. I want to make a mention to Casey in the booth. Is that we're going to be going to the
the Ram in Northgate?
No. The Antichrist clip next, and I didn't put it on the script, so I just want to make sure he gets that queued up.
Yeah, apparently there's something much worse than you can be than a Kenyan, and I guess that is the Antichrist.
Which is,
I like to think of the Antichrist as Bizarro Jesus.
Why is that?
Well, rather than just being, you know, it's kind of like Superman has Bizarro, who's basically the opposite of Superman. I like to think of this as the Bizarro Jesus. And he's basically like the evil version of him that wears slightly different colors. And maybe he wears a gold sash and a dagger. Maybe he has a scar on his face, but looks like Jesus otherwise. But there's at least some, you know, visual cue that people can do to say, oh, that's the bad guy.
Well, you know what? I think that they should always do the Spock.
The Spock goatee.
That's your cue to an evil version of something else.
But if Jesus has a goatee, does that mean the Antichrist is cleanly shaven?
Well, Jesus has a full beard. He doesn't have a goatee. So
oh.
I think that'd be a perfect cue for the Antichrist.
Yeah, goatees are really good for bad guys. That's why General Zod and the Master from Doctor Who have goatees.
Yes. So anyway, as you've probably guessed, our next conspiracy is Obama the Antichrist?
Now, question mark.
Question mark. Now, just know that before Barack Obama became a presidential candidate, a lot of people thought Hillary was the Antichrist. And I've actually got some emails from folks who say that she's the Great Whore of Babylon, and it all lines up that she is the Antichrist. And before that, it was Bill Clinton when he was president. So really what's going on here, I think, is that is that most people who are conservative are religious. And when a non-conservative president non-conservative candidate becomes president, he's therefore not of us. And anytime you have someone who is not of you, you can easily become suspicious of them.
His follower was actually doing that with Clinton back in the 90s, where he put out these tapes that he was giving to his followers. They were talking about the series of murders that Clinton had committed, yes, apparently, on his path to the White House.
Right.
So it's nothing new.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, when Bill Clinton didn't become anything other than a guy who got a blowjob, for the most part, folks, that theory just dissipates and it becomes something else.
Yeah, he's not the Antichrist anymore.
He's the Antichrist in some other way, and I actually don't get that. But what happens, and this is a very good thing to bring up, is what happens when a conspiracy theory falls through? You would think that all the people who purport that conspiracy theory would all dissipate and they'd all be disillusioned, but no, they find some sort of way to cognitive dissonance. They find some sort of out.
Yeah.
All right, well, we were vigilant. We were watching him every step of the way, and we prevented socialism from coming into our country. We prevented him from being an antichrist or a Manchurian candidate. It was because we were all watching him collectively.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, like, let's all
beautiful
cheer each other.
Beautiful and non-falsifiable.
Yes, yes.
There's no way to lose.
Yeah.
You just throw something out, discern it, and then at the last minute you saved it from the brink of disaster.
Right.
Mostly by screaming stuff about him on the internet, which is always the most effective way of stopping somebody.
Yeah. So anyway, we have a clip for you, and this is a way of making Barack Obama and the Antichrist by way of Aramaic. Why don't we go ahead and roll that clip? It's a little bit long, but let's do it.
Two words to go in mind with this clip is Chewbacca.
Did Jesus
defense.
Really reveal the name of the Antichrist? I will report the facts. You can decide. In Luke chapter 10, verse 18, Jesus said these words.
This.
And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from the heavens. These words are written in Greek and translated to English. However, Jesus spoke these words originally in Aramaic, which is the most ancient form of Hebrew. As you know, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. If a modern Jewish rabbi were to speak these words of Jesus today, he would speak them in Hebrew, much the same way that Jesus would have spoken them. So in Hebrew, Jesus said that he saw Satan falling as lightning from the heights or from the heavens. So what are the words for lightning and heights or heavens in Hebrew? From the Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, word number 1299, a primitive root word meaning to lighten or lightning or to cast forth, the word is barak. In the Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, word number 1300, lightning, or by analogy, a gleam, a flashing sword, or a brightness or a glittering, the Hebrew word is barak. So lightning, or a flash of light, in Hebrew is pronounced barak or barak. Now consider this amazing fact. The book of Isaiah is the source of origin for the Christian concept and understanding of Satan, or Lucifer, as Isaiah calls him, in chapter 14, especially in verses 12 through 19. In Isaiah chapter 14, verse 14, Lucifer, or Satan, is credited with these words, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. In the verses of Isaiah that refer directly to Lucifer, several times it is mentioned that Satan has fallen from the heights or from the heavens. The Hebrew word used in this text for the heights from which Satan fell is Strong's Hebrew word 1116, pronounced Bama. Bama is most commonly used to refer to a high sacred place, as well as to the heights of the heavens or the clouds. In Hebrew, the letter wa is often transliterated as a U. Some scholars use the O for this transliteration. It is primarily used as a conjunction to join concepts together. So to join in Hebrew poetry the concept of lightning or barak and a high place like heaven or the heights of heaven, the letter U, or sometimes O, the Hebrew letter wa, would be used. So, barak Obama, or Barak Obama, in Hebrew poetry, similar to the style written in Isaiah, would translate literally as lightning and the heights or the heavens or lightning from the heights of the skies or the heavens. The word Satan is Satan in Hebrew, a direct translation. So back to Jesus' prophecy in Luke chapter 10, verse 18. If spoken by a Jewish rabbi today, influenced by the poetry of Isaiah, he would say these words in Hebrew, the words of Jesus in Luke chapter 10, verse 18, as, "And I saw Satan as Barak Obama." Did Jesus reveal to us the name of the Antichrist?
I think you get it.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're following along with this, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood, and therefore...
she's a witch. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So anyway, so as you can see, there's a lot of transcribing of letters. There's a lot of moving things around. You've got to pull from one piece of scripture and then pull for another, and just you really got to make a stretch to make that happen. So what are these guys going to do when Barack Hussein Obama's term ends and nothing happens? That, you know, nothing in Revelations comes to pass. Well, it's because we were vigilant. That's what's going to happen, as all these failed prophecies have before.
Yeah,
that's all that's going to happen. So anyway, our big one today is Jesse Ventura.
Oh, Jesse.
Yeah. So we have a ton of clips from this. Jesse Ventura came out with his own show, Conspiracy Theories. And basically, it's really a conspiracy hypothesis, because let's face it, I mean, none of these pass any muster in terms of evidence or any real facts. One thing to notice that one thing we talked about earlier was negative evidence. And you're going to see lots and lots and lots of negative evidence. So one of the first clips I was hoping we could run is the intro to his show regarding the secret societies, and that is the Bilderberg Group. Now, Jesse purports that the Bilderberg Group, actually many people purport that the Bilderberg Group is controlling the whole world. So if that clip is ready, let's go ahead and roll that. That's the Bilderberg intro.
Hidden power, secrets, cover-ups, corruption. You think you know the whole story? Think again. I've been governor, a Navy SEAL, a fighter. I've heard things that'll blow your mind. And now I think it's time you get the whole story.
Now, Jesse Ventura exposes the secret society of elite power brokers that pulls the strings and calls the shots.
Talking about the control of absolutely everything on the planet.
It's not a fantasy. They meet in plain sight.
This is the scene of the crime.
Only no one knows what goes on behind closed doors.
They say we're not secret, we're private.
I need you to move off the property.
We're being kept well back from the building.
Until now. They control the money.
When you control the purse strings, you control the world.
They control the food.
They're poisoning our people.
They even decide who will live and who will die.
They want you dead, Governor.
Why?
And their most lethal plot may be underway right now.
The idea is to target the human immune system.
They're out to kill me.
Jesse Ventura confronts the most powerful and ruthless conspiracy yet. The group that runs the world. The ones who want you dead. The Bilderbergs and the global death plot.
Think the Bilderbergs control the world, please give us a call. In fact, if you are a Bilderberg, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 206-421-5658. So in a nutshell, one of the problems with this show is that it's not only completely illogical, but it's actually internally inconsistent. Yeah. In fact, you and I were watching it not long ago, and you had pointed out that either they control the world or they don't.
Either they're on the cusp of world domination, or they already control everything. That if this everything is a grab for more power, how much more power is there than everything?
Right. In the show, Daniel Estulon, one of the first guys they interviewed, said that they control the money, they control the purse strings, they control the sun. He says this. They control the sun, they control the air, they control the population. Well, what else do they need? What
How much richer can you have than everything?
It's like being Richie Rich. You know? You're swimming in gold and gems. What else do you need? So anyway, but later on in the show, they say that America is a beacon of hope, that we're the last bastion, and that we're about to be controlled, but somehow we're fighting it off. It just, even internally, there's no logical sense.
And then later on in that same episode, Jesse Ventura meets at an airfield with somebody who doesn't want to enter the United States because apparently we're the source of all this evil. I mean, which one is it? Because it can't be both.
Right, right.
Either this is the source of it, and... It's just amazing how selectively they use clips and how even internally there's really no consistent narrative.
Right. I'm amazed at how completely dishonest this show is. I'm amazed at it. I mean, they selectively edit people, even people that they agree with, because they don't want you to know what they really think about things.
Yeah, I think that there's different levels of what people consider crazy, especially in the conspiracy world. That, yeah, maybe Jesse Ventura is here, but David Icke is, like, here.
Yeah.
And they actually do interview David Icke. Do we want to show the David Icke clip?
You know, before we do the David Icke thing, let's we're going to load up clip number 5. And this is their own internal meeting, okay? And this is where they're all kind of deciding what the conspiracy actually is. And notice how they keep building off of each other. So why don't we go ahead and roll clip number 5. And this is...
This is way more urgent than I even thought. I talked to Alex Jones, and he told me one of the main objectives of the Bilderbergs, get this, depopulation of the world, cutting down the masses.
And how does he say they're going to do it?
I got information that they're actually poisoning the world's food supply.
Yeah, and what about medicine?
You think they're poisoning the medicine, too?
If they are as powerful as we've been led to believe, then they'd have access to the medicine. They'd be able to do it.
You're saying a lot more. They're not just a secret society. They'd be mass murderers.
Look, if you go back through recent history, it's full of famines and disasters and plagues and all kinds of things that suddenly just pop out of nowhere.
Basically, people, Alex Jones looked me right in the eye and said they're out to kill me. I want to know how they plan on doing it. This is way...
He loves that clip.
He loves that. Yeah, in fact, what I did was, and we'll play this later, is that I actually have a clip of all the times that he's either threatened or says that he's threatened. And I think that's hilarious to watch.
Like 5 times in this episode where he's like, they're out to kill me.
They're out to kill me, Jesse Ventura. Well, that show aired in November or December of 2009. And here we are in July, and nothing yet.
Jesse's still fine.
In fact, he's actually making new episodes. So the Bilderbergs apparently aren't very effective at killing Jesse Ventura, even though his schedule is quite public. He does book tours and things like that. And they're just too busy.
He's an easy guy to pick out in a crowd, too. He's huge.
Yes. So it really speaks to the fact that it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if we could say that. But
well, we just did.
So David Icke, why don't we go ahead and load up clip number 6. At this point in the show, they're going to interview David Icke, and you actually had a lot of great information on him, but let's go ahead and roll that clip and talk about David Icke when we get back.
The immune system.
Don't worry, it doesn't spoil anything.
So anyway, why don't you go ahead and talk to us about David Icke?
This is like the selective levels of crazy, is that David Icke is a conspiracy nut too, just like Alex Jones, just like Jesse Ventura, except he goes a little bit further with it, where it isn't about these secret groups of financiers that control the world. It's alien shape-shifting lizards
right.
that control everything.
Right. And a lot of people actually don't know this about David Icke. Or
he's proud of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that he really believes that the Bush family, I think Al Gore is a lizard, the British royal family, these are shape-shifting lizard people who secretly control everything.
Right. Shape-shifting lizard is not a euphemism for something else.
It's not
a code word for something else. He really thinks, literally, that they are shape-shifting lizards.
That they're aliens, and that the internet, intergalactic Sasquatch and the Chupacabra play it. They're different alien species.
Really? All right.
I mean, why would you have the ability to move across dimensional planes and you just go suck on a goat in Mexico? I mean, that's your plan?
Yeah. That's
even sadder than grabbing hillbillies and probing them.
It doesn't hold up.
So, but yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that when you see the clip of him on Ventura's show, Ventura leaves that part out. He wants to use this dude as a credible source, but he can't do that if he lets him talk for too long.
Right.
He's going to talk about the lizards. And even Alex Jones screams about David Icke, claiming that he's in on it, that he's like, oh, he's here to discredit this entire thing because, oh, he's right on the point about the secret people who control the world, but then he gets to the point where it's lizard men and it's all out. But that's the same thing. It's always this game of blackjack where every time you say hit me, a different degree of crazy comes down. And you're like, okay, secret people control the world. Okay, drugs in our food. Okay, controls the media. I mean, hit me. But then once you hit lizards, I'm sorry. For me personally, I hit 21 a long time ago. But it's funny how they have this different degradations for who they consider crazy.
Yeah.
There's different levels of crazy. And
right.
So they can avoid that. The show obviously has their own standards of what they believe. So they just leave out the stuff from David Icke that's going to be crazy.
Right, right. All right, so let's look at the next clip, and that's clip number 7, where they interview Dr. Stanley Monteith regarding the dangers of aspartame. So let's take a look at that.
Monteith is waiting. He's an authority on the world's food supply, where it comes from, and what's added to it.
So Dr. Monteith, what makes you so certain that our food supply is being poisoned?
Well, because of the things that they're putting in the food supply that are poisonous. Aspartame is a poison. The officials at the Federal Drug Administration tried to keep the product out of our food supply because extensive studies that showed what it could do.
What exactly is aspartame?
Aspartame is a chemical. It's made up of aspartic acid and phenylalanine. And it breaks down into formaldehyde and eventually into wood alcohol. And it produces all sorts of problems, mental problems, and it impacts on literally every organ in the body. And they know this, and there are extensive animal studies that show this, and it never should have been put into our food.
June's prepared to be surprised, but not for what's about to come.
And so you're saying it's available in most prepared foods?
Well, in many prepared foods, especially baby food. They're poisoning our children. These are wicked and evil people.
So my favorite part about that clip is the baby food jar out of focus. You know, like as if the person's just ingested aspartame or something. Or maybe they didn't actually want to use a real jar of baby food because they want to avoid liability.
I find it hilarious that they're afraid to go after... They're not afraid to go after the people who control the world, but they're afraid of being sued by a baby food
company. By Gerber, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Gerber will come down hard on them in a way.
We don't care about the Bilderbergs.
Never match.
It's the Gerber baby food.
What is Gerber control? That's the real question.
Yeah. So
that even Jesse's afraid of Gerber,
right? And that's really what we speak to when it comes to positive versus negative evidence. That really speaks perfectly to that. Is that they're willing to put out accusations, but when it actually comes down to, well, who's actually doing it? They obfuscate and get gauzy, and things are out of focus all of a sudden. And that really speaks to the major dishonesty in this show. Another thing that I've noticed a lot is that the reaction shots of the reporter—they
love
those. Like it's in the medicine. Now, early in the show, they've already proposed the idea that it's in the medicine. But yet, when he mentions medicine again, she almost can't stand up anymore.
Yeah,
she's so shocked at the notion.
They have whatever that problem was that that guy had in the movie Memento. They just forget. It's shocking again.
Yes. Yeah.
But I noticed that even the scene where they're talking about, it's in the food, it's in the drugs, is one guy starts out by saying, hey, you know, it might be this potential assertion. It's that? Oh, and they go from it might be to it is, and then they start building on this foundation that's just a total assertion. And they just go crazy with it. They start snowballing into something just nuts.
Let's talk a little bit about the safety of aspartame. Aspartame has been out since 1974, and its safety is well known. It's actually been reviewed by not only the FDA, but 90 other countries in terms of its safety. There's actually nothing wrong with it, obviously within normal dosage. So for someone to say that aspartame does all these terrible things to you and it affects every organ of your body, well, where's your science? Where's your evidence? It's okay to just say these things, sure, but where's your evidence? Back it up.
But that's the thing, is that when you don't provide the evidence, a lot of times they'll simply say that, ooh, big science is against it. They're trying to keep the truth away.
Right.
So there really is no way to win an argument with these people.
Right. When you use negative evidence, it's unfalsifiable. How can you...
But the absence of evidence is just evidence of a cover-up.
Right, right.
So, and that's weird. It was early in the episode they talked about the FDA protecting us from aspartame, and then later on the FDA is evil.
Right. So, it's okay to use articles from mainstream media when those articles support your notion. But once they don't, well, the mainstream media is in on it. And the thing about the mainstream media is that earlier in the show they say how Time Warner is part of the big conspiracy. Well, Time Warner owns True TV. And so either they forgot to check Jesse Ventura's show, or...
or they went rogue.
They could have went rogue against the Bilderbergs. And maybe they're starting their own group. Who knows?
Who knows?
Anyway, we have another clip for you, and that is the wrap-up of the show. And I thought this would be fun because I want you to get a sense as to... I want you to get a
sense. People have been talking.
Okay. So, all right, why don't we, if we have a two-minute morning, I want to talk a little bit about the RAM.
Oh, yes.
And I was hoping we can close the show before we do the credits. I was actually hoping we could do clip number 10. This is all the times that Jesse is threatened in the show, and I think that'd be a fun way to kind of close out the
show.
They
want you
dead,
Governor.
We're going to meet at the RAM.
Why?
They're out to kill me.
But Jesse knows he'd better believe, because he himself is a target.
So they want to start eliminating people. People like you and me.
Then, Jesse Ventura learns he's the target of a murderous plot.
They want you dead.
They want to kill me.
They want you dead, Governor.
Why? Basically, people, Alex Jones looked me right in the eye and said they're out to kill me. I want to know how they plan on doing it.
They want you dead, Governor.
Are they out to thin out the population, kill me, and maybe you?
They want
and
you dead.
That's all the times that Jesse is threatened in the show.
Yeah, he likes to assert that he's been threatened. But again, if you'd like to meet us, or not to yell at us or hit us, or scream that we're in on this massive conspiracy, but come down to the RAM. We're at Northgate Mall from 4:30 on, and we're going to have to enjoy some food and conversation. Feel free to join us. It should be a lot of fun.
Right. And, you know, it's important to close out the fact that we can't prove that we're not in on the conspiracy. Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Again, that's not the thing, is that burden of proof isn't on us to disprove it. You got to prove it yourself. So we want to thank you for your time and watching us this evening. And we'll see you again next Sunday at 3 p.m. here on SCAN.
Thank you.